on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The Assembly formed a 32-member task force in September to study the inequities that communities of color face in our state. And this had followed the police shooting of Jacob Blake in August. State Representative Sheila Stubbs was tapped to co-chair Assembly Speaker Robin Voss's task force on racial disparities. We're circling back to ask about their work. How would you describe the racial climate in our state? How do you want state lawmakers to address racial disparities and police brutality? It's 800-642-1234. Sheila Stubbs is a Democratic state representative from Madison. She heads the Legislative Black Caucus and co-chairs the Speaker's Task Force on Racial Disparities. Representative Stubbs, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, good morning, Kate. Thank you so much for giving me this really great opportunity.
Well, good morning to you on this MLK Day, which follows the killings of Breonna Taylor in 2020 in March, George Floyd in May, and the shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha in August, and each sparked protests in our nation. What are you reflecting on this MLK Day?
Well, we still have a long way to go. You know, I truly believe as long as you hold on to hope, you can still make it. You know, we still have a long way to overcome. And, you know, we shall overcome one day, and we have to do it together, individually, and then bring it at a unification aspect. We know that our country is at a divided state right now. You know, it's not about a red country, a blue country, but a United States of America. And right now, the hardest conversation I think our country has to face is race. And it's a hard conversation because it's a conversation we have never truly sat down and engaged. And it's across our nation, and it's across the globe. And I think the unfortunate killing of Mr. George Floyd, who is a catalyst, a drum major for justice, and unfortunately the killing of our princess, Breonna Taylor, and so many others, and the shooting of Jacob Blake, and the killing of Tony Robinson, Savelle Smith, and Acevedo. There are so many that have been killed. You know, this is a somber moment, but this is a moment that is an awakening moment that you need to go back and self-reflect and do something. Don't sit around and watch things happen. Be engaged, be involved, figure out how we can move really good policy forward. Have your voice a part of that conversation. And, you know, one thing I can say, Kate, is there are so many biases, explicit and implicit bias. There's perceptions. But one thing I can say at the state of Wisconsin, what we're beginning to do is have training so we can talk about perception, so we can give all of our state employees that wonderful opportunity to be able to be in a safe space and have some really difficult conversations. And that's where we are right now, you know, as I think as a state, as a country, and as a world, that it is time to really have the hard conversations about race.
I want to ask about the Black Lives Matter movement in 2020, your reflections there. There was polling suggesting there was a lot of support for the movement, which waned later in the year. What would Martin Luther King Jr. consider for 2020 in terms of the Black Lives Matter movement?
You know, in his speech, he talked about police brutality. He's always believed in peaceful protesting. And we know Dr. King represented all voices, from the PhDs to the average, you know, janitor or the sanitation worker, which he was killed because of going to Memphis to actually represent them. To the child, to the voiceless. And, you know, Dr. King was here way before his time because he saw the future. He saw the day when one day little black girls and little white girls and little black boys and little white boys can hold hands and say, we shall overcome one day. He's seen this future. And what I can say is Dr. King, I truly believe, me personally, Sheila steps in. I think he would be peacefully protesting. I think he would be in D.C. I know he would be talking to presidents, and I know he would have a movement across this country because every life matters. And let's be clear, also Black lives matter.
We are talking with Democratic Representative Sheila Stubbs, who heads the Legislative Black Caucus. She co-chairs the Speaker's Task Force on Racial Disparities that was formed in September. You can join in. What issues in Wisconsin politics do you think Martin Luther King Jr. would be talking about today? What do you think are our state's most pressing civil rights issues? 800-642-1234 to join in. Representative, you've called Wisconsin the absolute worst state to raise a black family. Do you think that is still the case?
Absolutely. You know, as I say things and I give stats, I also try and give a solution. I'm very practical. You know, it is the absolute worst state to raise a black family, but my family and I are here, and so many other black families. We are here. We are working. We're trying to change the norms. We're getting jobs for the first time, being the first in a company. We don't want to be the last to be the CEO or, you know, to be a lieutenant governor. Let's just be clear. To be the first, you know, I was the first in 2018, first African-American elected to the state legislature from Dane County. I broke 170 years. I should not be the first. And I should not have been the first in 2018. That tells you we have a long way to go. I'm so honored to say I've been joined by a wonderful colleague, Representative Samba Balde, you know, Representative Francesca Hong, which is more diversity coming to our state capitol. And, you know, we have to continue to change these norms, and we have to go into spaces where we have been the only black or the only Asian or the only Latino, and go in those spaces and change the space and have those difficult conversations. I can say firsthand that since I've been at the Capitol, things are happening. I've had some really hard conversations. I've had some crying days in the Capitol. I have some bills that have not passed the state legislature that I'm working really hard this session to get passed. For example, creating an Office of Equity and Inclusion, which would help with the disparities across the state of Wisconsin. I have yet to have one Republican join me on a bill that Governor Evers signed on to. All of the cabinet members are part of every Democrat, Senate, and Assembly side have joined on, and it is the bill that is going to move our state forward so that we can have people dedicated, employees dedicated, to get that data. And we know data to be collected to get those numbers take years. Let's reverse those numbers. It's going to take time, but I'm ready. I've been working hand in hand with my colleagues at the county level, at the state level, to change those demographics. So, you know, I know it can be done one moment at a time, but we need all hands on deck in order to change these daunting disparities.
I want to turn to the governor's administration. Evers told the Associated Press a few weeks ago he may include criminal justice reforms in his executive budget, and he hopes it will resolve disparities in the system. He wouldn't offer specifics. What do you hope to see from the next state budget?
Oh, my God. Wouldn't that be amazing if I got everything that I wanted to see? So, for one, you know, use the force policy. I think every bill that the Legislative Black Caucus, along with Governor Evers, worked toward for the August 31st deadline date that, I shouldn't say deadline date, but the August 31st special session date that Governor Evers requested, I would like to see every one of those bills, you know, at his executive expenditure, which would be, you know, use of force, which would be, you know, anything with body cameras. I like to see crisis intervention training as a part of that package bill. I like to see no-knock warrants ban. I like to see no chokehold ban. I like to see the standards board change to make sure we can get community leaders a part of. I like to see funding, actually real funding coming to our communities. We know right now we have a bill that's been introduced back at the special session that we're looking at, and the you know, soon to be in our task force, and it talks about funding inter-communities where there's violence. It's only $1 million. I would like to see that funding, you know, increase, because $1 million across the state of Wisconsin is not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Inter-communities where we know there's a lot of violence that's taking place. So I would certainly like to see an increase on there. So, you know, those are a number of the bills. So every one of those nine bills that was introduced with the Legislative Black Caucus and Governor Evers and Lieutenant Governor Barnes, I would certainly like to see at the executive level.
State Representative Sheila Stubbs, she is with us, co-chairs the Assembly's Task Force on Racial Disparities. We're checking in on the work. Are you hopeful that Republicans and Democrats can work across the aisle on police violence and move a package of bills this session? What legislation do you want to address systemic racism and policing where you live? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute, more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking with Representative Sheila Stubbs, a Democrat from Madison who co-chairs the 32-member Speaker's Task Force on Racial Disparities. It was formed after the police shooting at Jacob Blake and the nationwide protests for racial justice. The Kenosha County District Attorney announced 2 weeks ago that the officer who shot Blake seven times in the back would not be charged. Blake spoke with Good Morning America recently on whether he resisted arrest.
I resisted to getting beat on, and what I mean by that is not falling, not letting them put their head on my neck. That's all I was thinking, honestly.
Where do we go from here? How can lawmakers address police violence and policymaking? 800-642-1234. And Representative Sheila Stubbs is with us for 10 more minutes. Representative, take us to the task force work now. What is the status of this group?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for asking. We're actually at meeting number 4. Our meeting that we had scheduled on January 7th unfortunately had to be canceled because it was a legislative date for an assembly floor session. So it had to be rescheduled. So we are scheduled to meet this month at the end of January, and then our next following meeting would be the beginning of February. We are at the process right now of continuing our conversation on use of force, continuing our conversation on crisis, intervention, training, and continuing and finalizing our conversation on body cameras, which we started that. We had that last meeting back in early part of December in Green Bay, where we had a couple of presenters come before us. I think it's really important that when we finalize the conversation on use of force, that we have a uniformed definition of use of force. So every agency has to permit themselves to one definition, and it needs to come from the state of Wisconsin. In addition, we're going to go back and have the conversation on required training for use of force and de-escalation skill sets. It's important that we talk about, again, I talked about the grant for violent intervention programs that is so desperately needed in our community. I talked a little bit about the chokehold, prohibiting chokeholds and posting use of force policies. We need to go back and talk about what these policies do to require each law enforcement agency to not only prepare a policy regarding the use of force officers, but to make it available online. Transparency is so important for our community to be able to follow what's happened when there's been a shooting involved. We also have to talk about profiling. You know, I personally had my profile incident in August 7th of 2018, and I think it's important that we hold people accountable who intentionally call the police on you just because of your color and your race is out of place for that community. We have to hold people accountable. We also have to begin to have those conversations about the Department of Justice reporting on use of force incidents that require certain demographic information to be collected at each incident and to be placed on the DOJ website. Oftentimes, people don't know you need to go to the DOJ website to get the update when there has been an officer-involved shooting. I've learned so much myself over this term that I've been at the legislature, learning about how do you follow once there's been an incident with an officer-involved shooting. Also, let's talk about the no-knock warrants. Let's prohibit that. And then let's talk about the personnel files. I think that's really important that we talk about these police officers once they've been involved with police shootings, that we need to make sure certain changes take place with the board and there's a chance that we can look at, and each agency is able to maintain employment files on that individual because they can go from one agency to the next agency. And you don't even know they've been involved in a major shooting. So that's something that I know that our task force will be talking about. One of the other quickly comments I like to make is
sure.
Our task force will be traveling to Kenosha. I think that's critical to get to Kenosha. Hopefully when we get there, we'll be able to meet with the Blake family and other community leaders and listen to what they're asking us they need from the state of Wisconsin. And I hope that when we get to Kenosha, we are met with community. I want those community organizers, those leaders to come to the task force and tell us what policy needs to be passed. So that's a little bit about where we are. Hopefully by March or late February, we should have a package of bills available to introduce.
We are talking with Representative Sheila Stubbs, who co-chairs the Speaker's Task Force on Racial Disparities, which is made up of community activists, law enforcement officers, faith leaders, racial justice advocates, tribal leaders. It's a group of 32 people. Taking your calls on this work, 800-642-1234. Representative, we heard from Matt in Wausau, emailed in and said Republicans have done everything in their power to disenfranchise people of color in Wisconsin. And Speaker Voss, Matt says, is leading that effort. How do you think you can work with Republicans who have expressed their unwillingness to do anything on this issue?
Well, I think that I'm in a really good position to affect the change that needs to happen. As you know, I was one of the biggest critics of the Republicans, my colleagues, not coming to work and working on these common sense policies that I believe that was criminal justice work that needed to be done. In fact, they should have already been passed. But the reality is, it's not. The only way to get the work done is to work bipartisan. And being a co-chair, I'm in a leadership position, and I can say to you and say to Matt, that we are taking each of these policies one by one. And like I said, right now there are three areas that we are having two meetings on, and then the next meeting I'll be responsible for, and we will talk about the nine bills that are here. And I think it's important that the community leaders that are at that table help be the drivers of the bills that are going to come out of the task force. It's the only way it can be done. It's not the Republicans. It's not the Democrats. It is the community that's going to really drive the policy out of this task force, and then it becomes extremely political when we, meaning Representative Steinicke, myself, have to go back to our different parties and try and persuade them to be inclusive of the bills that have come out of the task force.
You mentioned the task force traveling to Kenosha. We saw earlier this month Kenosha County District Attorney Michael Gravely announce he wouldn't file criminal charges against the officers for the shooting of Jacob Blake. What is your reaction to that decision?
First and foremost, let me say that I think the community time and time again continues to learn that there's absolutely nothing that's being done with these officers that continue to have police brutality. You know, first and foremost, I just want to say to Mr. Blake and his family and the entire Kenosha community that community deserved justice. And instead, we saw another act of brutality go unpunished. We have to hold these officers accountable. The entire time to change is now. Now is the right time. And we cannot allow another injustice to scar our community without a challenge. You know, this decision is a failure not only on our criminal justice system, but it's failure on leaders who do not advocate for meaningful change. We need to make it clear to Wisconsin, Black Lives Matter, and that police brutality will not be tolerated. That's what I think. That's what I believe. And going to the community is facing a hurt community. You know, I talked to so many of the activists who said, here we go again. You know, when are people going to be held accountable? When are they going to listen to us? I had activists calling me and crying. And I said, you know what? We are in a position to make change effective. And so trying to stay focused in this time, keeping hope, because I always hold on to hope because I'm optimistic, and knowing change will come. It will come. We have a new administration that's going to be in the White House with President Biden and Vice President Harris, they are new administrations that I truly believe will look at police brutality, will give us the policies that is needed at the federal level. And so I am hopeful this new administration.
We only have 10 seconds left. Can you tell us anything about the prospects of finding common ground among lawmakers on a COVID relief bill here?
You know, if we all go to the Capitol and continue to represent our district, we will find common ground. It has to be about the people. I represent the people, and whatever it takes to get to common ground, Representative Stubbs is ready to do so.
Representative, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Sheila Stubbs, Democratic State Representative from Madison, co-chairing the Speaker's Task Force on Racial Disparities. Coming up, it's the head of the State Department of Safety and Professional Services. Among other duties, the agency oversees job credentials for physicians and engineers, accountants, tattoo artists. The list goes on. Are you licensed by the DSPS? What do you want to ask Secretary Designee Don Krim, 800-642-1234. There's more State Cap after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Join us at noon for Wisconsin's 41st official tribute and ceremony honoring the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It is a virtual program due to COVID. The theme is Together as One and includes highlights from past ceremonies featuring author and civil rights advocate Michelle Alexander. Governor Evers will present the 2021 MLK Heritage Awards. It's hosted by WPR's own Dr. Jonathan Overby. That is today at noon. Hope you can join us on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. Now we're looking at the work of the Department of Safety and Professional Services in the pandemic. It's an agency that regulates hundreds of occupational licenses. Think physicians, engineers, accountants, tattoo artists, real estate brokers, the list goes on. It's also in the process of updating building codes. Are you licensed through DSPS? Are you a contractor or in the trades? What do you want to know about the changing building codes? 800-642-1234. Don Krim is Secretary Designee of the Department of Safety and Professional Services. Secretary Krim, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's take a moment here on this MLK Day to gather your thoughts about the legacy, about the work we're doing today, and reflections on what you've seen the last year.
Well, you know, I would say when you think about Dr. Martin Luther King and his message and his standing for peace as well as service, I think this past year with dealing with the COVID pandemic and other civic unrest, it really calls for peace and calls for service, because all of us have a role to play, whether it's our own individual responsibilities or whether it's helping others. And so I think as we think about his legacy, that's what I take most from it.
With the Black Lives Matter protests across the nation and globally, we saw employers pledging to be more inclusive, more aware. How have you seen this, be carried out in our state government?
Well, I am glad you brought that up. When you think about awareness around diverse concerns, when you have many perspectives at the table providing input on best policy, best workplaces, how we can best support one another in this work, diversity matters. And so Governor Evers last year signed Executive Order 59 that asked state government to really examine diversity, equity, and inclusion practices across state government so that we can support one another better and be more responsive to the citizens of Wisconsin by bringing multiple perspectives to get at the best policy and to provide opportunities where maybe they have not existed previously, they can now exist because we're ever mindful of it.
You've lived in Wisconsin 25, 26 years or so. You didn't expect to stay, you know, when you got here and you've made your life here. How could our state attract and retain more professionals of color?
Well, I think first and foremost is about welcoming people, understanding that yes, there is a culture, there is how Wisconsinites live, but understanding that there are many cultures and there's room and space for other perspectives. And so if we are to respond to changing times, you have to change a bit. And so if you, as we welcome newcomers to the state, we look at what they have to offer. How can they help us move things forward? And so I would say most and foremost, being open and welcoming to learning and hearing different voices to see how we can do better work together.
Let's shift gears a bit here and look at COVID. What has DSPS done since COVID in terms of the work that you're trying to do as an agency?
Well, I got to tell you, it has been quite a year for all Wisconsinites. But I would say I'm so proud of the work that our staff has done. Back in April, to make the pivot to remote work, we have been as busy as ever doing a lot. COVID has impacted almost all aspects of the work that we do. When you think about our over a million license holders, some of the impacts that they experienced in terms of being able to simply do their work safely, we've had to ensure that they're able to do their work safely. So a lot of times when people are in professions, they need to be licensed, as you know. Well, license renewals happen every year or 2 years or so, and our partners at testing centers around the country had closed due to COVID, so we had to think about new ways to support the licensed workforce. So we were able to delay license renewals. We were able to help financially by reducing renewal fees, where it made sense. We were able to waive late renewal fees where it made sense. We were able to hold on some of our recent graduates, especially those in healthcare fields that may need some testing to get started. We were able to push some of those deadlines ahead. And then when you think about just the overall response to the workforce, especially when you think about health, we knew our state, like many others, needed help. So we were able to make adjustments in licensing requirements, allowing individuals in good standings from other states to come and receive temporary licenses in a quick an expedited way. We were able to bring those who had retired within the last 5 years back into the workforce, allowing them to obtain temporary licenses so that they can help with the response. And then, as many people know, the building industry is essential to the state of Wisconsin. And so we were able to continue to do our part working with the industry around the state to stay working. Construction is an essential work. And so we've been able to do things more remotely in terms of inspections to keep the customers and our staff safe. We've been able to receive electronic plans that has actually helped us be more efficient in our work. We had already been looking at a full overhaul of our planning review process. And so the electronic plans just really helped us lean in and move more quickly into those changes. And our customers have been pleased with those changes. And we've been able to be more efficient with our workforce because of doing things at a distance.
How do those remote inspections work on building sites?
Well, we actually are able to utilize our cell phones and things to actually see at a distance what is happening. That way, you don't necessarily have to be on site. Oftentimes, the customer is on site, and our staff will guide them on what they're looking for so that they're able to provide the actual visual to be able to do those inspections.
Do you
And
think?
we've extended, let me add this too, we've extended that beyond just the customer field, the building industry, and have been able to use it for virtual pharmacy inspection as well to get new pharmacies up and running.
Do you think those types of changes will stay in place after the pandemic, after COVID?
I definitely believe the electronic plan submission and being able to do some of those things at a distance, because it will just make things more efficiency. From the virtual inspection, that will also continue. There will be some instances where it is more prudent, of course, to be on site, and so we will differentiate the difference and make the adjustments where appropriate.
We're talking with Don Krim, Secretary Designee of the Department of Safety and Professional Services, DSPS, as it goes by. Do you pursue a professional license? What questions do you have for the head of DSPS? Join in at 800-642-1234. Secretary Krim, we heard from Eric in Green Bay, who is in the plumbing profession, and Eric wants to know what they get from the fees they pay for licenses.
Well, I'm glad Eric has asked that question. We are an agency that does not receive any state dollars, so we are all program revenue. And so when the plumbers and other building industry people are receiving their licenses and paying for those fees, they are paying for plan reviews. They are paying for any type of work that we are doing when it comes to updating building codes, when we're looking at inspections. And so any response that is occurring from our staff around any building concerns and industries, those fees pay for that work.
And these licensures are in hundreds of areas.
Actually, all 72 counties, there are license holders everywhere in our state. What I appreciate about the depth and breadth of the work of our agency is we touch nearly one in three Wisconsinites with the work that we do.
Some healthcare workers came from out of state, as you mentioned. What kind of systems had to be put in place in order to be able to get these nurses and respiratory therapists and, many other people at work in Wisconsin?
Well, it was a heavy lift. We had to simultaneously process licenses in our normal way through all the steps that we utilize. But then in bringing people from out of state, we had to look at some reciprocity agreements and then how we can know the difference between that workforce and our current workforce. And that's why the temporary licenses were established, so we are able to keep a close eye on requirements and when licenses are done just in terms of processes. But it was twofold, and so we actually had to have our workforce do double duty, which, as you can imagine, has been tough. But we realize when needing to respond to something, a pandemic that has never happened in my lifetime, we needed to be flexible. We needed to see how we might relax some of the fees to get people working much more quickly. And so that's how we were able to do it.
We're talking with the Secretary Designee of the Department of Safety and Professional Services, DSPS. Don Krim is with us. Do you face obstacles with your licensing? What did you do to get a license in your profession? What do you want to know about the future of our state building codes pertaining to energy efficiency? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back for more State Cap in just a minute. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. On this Martin Luther King Jr. Day, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Let's get back to our conversation with the Secretary Designee of the Department of Safety and Professional Services, Don Krim. DSPS, it licenses the vast majority of our state's healthcare providers, physicians, nurses, pharmacists, respiratory therapists, and early on in the pandemic, as we've been talking about, DSPS brought more flexibility to the healthcare system so licensed health professionals from other states could help with Wisconsin's COVID surge. Secretary, the Pharmacy Examining Board falls under your DSPS umbrella. Last week, the board suspended the license of a pharmacist accused of ruining more than 500 doses of COVID vaccines because he thought it was unsafe. Where is DSPS in this investigation?
Thank you for sharing that. We, like all Wisconsinites, are concerned because we are trying to make sure that people can get vaccinated and have safety. And so, where we are in that investigation is, it's, as you know, it's ongoing, so I can't comment specifically on the case. You did mention that the pharmacist's license has been suspended, and that is pending the outcome of the criminal and disciplinary proceedings. And so, our investigators are working through the disciplinary process, and that is happening simultaneously as the criminal investigation also takes place.
What is the role of DSPS in its relationship with the pharmacy examining board? How do you work with this board and others like it?
And so, what we do is, our staff is really the workforce for the boards. The pharmacy board in this particular case has quite a bit of statutory latitude to make decisions about licenses and situations like this. Our agency does the collecting of the materials, all of the information that the board needs on hand to make whatever decision they reach. So we are the investigators, and then we collaborate with those boards so that they have all the information they need to make the decisions.
How are board members appointed?
Board members are appointed through the governor's office, and what we do is, we work closely with our board members and talk with them about what is missing, looking at different perspectives that could really help statewide to make the best decisions possible, and then we encourage those people to apply. There's also normally one or two public members who are not in the profession, but maybe who access those services that also can bring that perspective.
We heard from Brian in Eau Claire, called in, couldn't stay with us, and Brian wants to know how license fees are set. Brian is a speech language pathologist and notices that other professions, including occupational therapists and MDs, have much lower fees.
Brian, thank you for that question. Our fees are set by the amount of work that it entails to actually review the licenses. And so, again, we try to charge just what we need to do the necessary work. There's different statutory requirements per different licenses, and so the processing time and people power that it takes to do that work is how the license is then licensing fee is then set.
Last month, DSPS received a nearly $2 million federal grant from the Justice Department to improve the state enhanced prescription drug monitoring program. Can you explain this program and what these dollars will do?
Yes, we were so thrilled to receive that grant because, as you know, and many have read in the papers, unfortunately, our opioid abuse pandemic does continue, and it continues during this pandemic because people are concerned, people are struggling, and to access the services that they need, the PDMP can help in that response. And the way it helps in that response is, we realize when people are in pain, there is medication that should be taken, but that medication should be taken responsibly. And so, what the prescription drug monitoring program does is it helps doctors ensure that patients are getting the right dosage that they need and are not being overprescribed. And so, the monitoring programs helps doctors, EMTs, police, emergency personnel access records at their fingertips for those who are using prescription drugs to ensure that they're getting what they need, ensuring that they do not overprescribe so that we all can monitor what is needed. And so it's a network of medical information that works closely with our medical record system to ensure that people are getting just what they need. And so, what the grant will help us do is reach out with partners, especially those providers that are not networked with some of the updated electronic software systems that may have more trouble accessing that information, logging into patient records, we can actually help them do it in a more efficient way that may not be overall networked to the big systems.
We're talking with Don Krim, Secretary Designee of the Department of Safety and Professional Services, looking at the work of the department, especially amid COVID, and taking your questions. Are you a contractor? What has it been like to review your plans amid the pandemic? How do you feel about submitting them? 800-642-1234. Let's take a look at building codes now. And you're currently updating our state's building codes. What is behind this effort?
Well, with building codes, you really want to ensure that you stay up to date so that you can take advantage of especially new sustainable practices. So when you think about efficiencies, you want to, if your building codes are up to date, you're able to take advantage of the best and most sustainable practices in building codes and usage. So for example, here in Fitchburg, they have just built the Forest Edge Elementary School that is actually going to be the first net zero school in Wisconsin. And essentially what that means is it produces more energy than it uses. Up-to-date building codes are utilizing the best efficiency rates of HVAC, how to heat and cool the building, and just how to use minimal energy to support the usage of the building. And so when you have the most up-to-date codes, you're getting the most efficiency for your dollars.
Where do you see Wisconsin's building codes lagging, out of date, or just not on par with what we need to do to stop climate change?
Well, partially is it takes, even though it sounds simple to update the building codes, but it's about a 2-year process each time there's an update, because what you're doing is evaluating the efficiency of the current code and determining how it can be improved at the next stage. And so there's national organizations that our state links to so that we can share information and move the codes forward nationwide. And so when you think about efficiencies that are being discovered every day, the new codes help us take advantage of those discoveries. So when you think about one new efficiency that's really helping in building is mass timber. It's a more sustainable building material. Well, right now, the code level that we're at does not enable us to take advantage of that sustainable building material. So in updating the code, we then would have standards that actually match that sustainable building material, therefore creating greater efficiencies in buildings that we'd be using mass timber. And an economic boom to our state would enable us to create a new industry for Wisconsin forests.
There's only a couple seconds left. Would you have to grandfather in old building code?
Yes, we would. And so it would be for new buildings going forward.
Okay.
And then any updates that would be made would then be made to the new standards.
Secretary Krim, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. I appreciate you having me.
Don Krim is Secretary Designee of the Department of Safety and Professional Services. Just ahead, we talk about the next group of people to be vaccinated for COVID and what a new variant could mean in battling this pandemic. What questions do you have about the COVID vaccines? Bring them, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.